pull on your cargo shorts, button up your flannel, comb your beard, crack open your PBR, and reinforce your terrified narrow definition of what punk rock is, because it's Orgcore Mania on Punk News Podcast, episode 360. Hey, welcome back to Punk News Podcast, episode 360 with Adam White, with perfect timing. People are going to think that we put that sound effect in, but Adam White, are you not right now enjoying, as they say in Homestar Runner, a cold one?
I am. It's not a PBR. It's probably the opposite, but that's okay. It still made the same noise.
That was good, Adam. That was real good.
I was gonna crack it at some inopportune time when you were speaking just to be annoying, but then when you were like crack open a PBR, it was just sort of like the clouds parted and God shone down upon me, and it was like, this is your moment, son, take it. And I was like, oh my God, it's all coming together.
Well, if we ever need alcohol sound effects, Adam White is always on the call. That's for sure.
Hold on, can we make like a pouring noise? Let's see. Hold on. Oh no, it's not pouring very loudly.
I'll squish my iced tea. Can you guys hear this?
It's not. It sounded like a gerbil was.
That sounded horrifying.
And that's Ricky Franco. Ricky Franco, what beverage sounds did you bring to the Punk News Podcast this week?
None, you weirdo.
No beverage sounds. Well, listen, let's get right to it.
No.
Yeah. This is episode 360. This week was a big week for Orgcore Punk at Punk News. Big week. Probably the biggest Orgcore week we've had in a year or more, I'd say. Before we get into that, let's get into the mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And this first letter is from Jonathan Rowe. Hey guys, I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I'm currently vacationing in Brazil and I can't get my daily dose of punk news. What gives? I tried going on the website from a phone, tablet, desktop, Mac, PC, and all that happens is after 10 minutes of loading, it says error, connection time out. Tell Adam to work his Canadian computer mojo to fix it. And that's from Jonathan.
I don't actually have anything to do with the technical side of punk news, but I wonder if this means that we are somehow blocked by the Brazilian government because we've somehow besmirched the, like, I don't know, like the fine people of what? What's a Brazilian city? I'm blanking.
Sao Paulo?
Rio. Is that Rio. One? Where's San Juan? That's in Puerto Rico. anyways, Rio. That's
Janeiro.
What was I thinking? What's that other place in Brazil that I'm thinking of?
Sao Paulo.
San Paulo.
Yeah, okay. Good. Sao Paulo. Yeah, whatever. Anyways, did we piss them off?
I don't think so, man. Every Brazilian I've
met. Actually, hold on. Let me back that up. John, did you piss them off?
I don't think so, man. I love Brazil, and every Brazilian I've ever met, I've liked. I think Brazil is a what?
I think I gave a Brazilian band a mediocre review at one point.
Was that Ratos de Pereo?
No, I forgot what they were called. It was a long time ago.
What was that Brazilian band that used to be involved with punk news stuff? They sounded like Rancid. Blind Pigs. Blind Pigs was cool. I think they're Brazilian.
Blanca's cool.
Oh, God. Maybe they're not, and I'm just, like, mashing a whole bunch of Southern American countries together, and that's why we're banned. But that just happened now, so that means they would have to somehow future ban us. Let's find out where Blind Pigs are from. This does not solve the person's problem.
Blanca's cool, man. I like Blanca. Ricky, who's your go-to guy in Street Fighter 2?
I don't think I ever played it.
You played Street Fighter 2?
I think I played it in like arcades, but not enough to where I know the characters.
Ricky, I thought
you are a millennial. This is a millennial problem right here. Millennial.
No, I mean, for me, I don't really play video games anymore, but I was playing Nintendo 64 really when I was playing them, or maybe PS2 a little bit.
Man,
sorry.
Okay, so
let's clear up a few things here. First of all, Blind Pigs, they were a band from Sao Paulo, Brazil. So they looks like are still a band, I think. Well, they had a record come out in 2013. They had a self-titled record that came out in 2002 that they had us cover on Punk News. So anyways, that was a Brazilian band that we liked and was fun. I still don't understand why we're banned there, though. I mean, I mean, if anything, John, it's probably your fault.
I think it's cool.
Most things are.
You think it's cool? You're like, fuck them. I don't want to.
Yeah, let's get it. What other? We should find out. People, write in and see if you're from, you know, not a North American or Western Europe country. Are we banned in your country?
You can figure this out with like an internet tool. We don't need to poll the public.
I don't know these things, but you know what? If you're in China and you're listening to this, tell us.
I'm pretty sure we're banned
North Korea, if you can, try it.
I'm pretty sure we're banned in most other punk publications. I'm pretty sure we're not welcome in any of those places. Especially after I talk. Did I guys ever tell you that story of the time I met one of the girls or women from Maximum Rock and Roll?
No.
I was at Refused, which I'm not even really a Refused fan. So I'm talking to this girl, and she's like, oh, I work for Maximum Rock and Roll. And for some reason, I thought a good way to kind of like work my mojo was by telling her I thought it was a bad idea that they banned Nobody from Maximum Rock and Roll. And let me tell you, that conversation took a nosedive real quick. I don't know what I was thinking. She's like, I work for Maximum Rock and Roll. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I read Maximum Rock and Roll. I'm like, listen, don't you think it's weird that they banned Nobody from Maximum Rock and Roll simply because he put out a 7-inch on Scion? Listen, people, a good way to not pick up chicks is to insult their livelihood or their hobby or however you want to put it.
It's a good thing when you're in any situation is to not approach a new conversation by opening your grievance bag and rooting around to figure out what possibly awkward and confrontational thing you can go interject into the situation that wasn't previously there. Good job, John. That's probably what you did to Brazil.
The last time I was trying to pick up Brazil as a whole. Listen, we got one more email. And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Give me a second here. I'm going to pull this email up real quick.
I'm surprised we didn't get any write-ins about the whole Warped Tour Dickies debacle.
I think that actually just ran today, honestly. Didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't we tell people not to write about that? I think I did.
Well, I think
I said we'd maybe read two of them.
This is from Honey Boof Boof. Raw footage is serviceable at worst. You're off your gourd. Gangsta Rap Made Me Do It is one of Cube's best songs. And so that's Honey Boof Boof telling me that I was wrong in maligning Ice Cube's Raw Footage album. I'm willing to re-listen to the album, but I stand by my criticism. I think the last good Ice Cube album was Laugh Now, Cry Later. I thought How the West Was Won and Raw Footage were pretty weak. I'm a big Ice Cube fan. First four albums are fantastic. Raw Footage is very, Laugh Now, Cry Later is very good, but I thought Raw Footage and How the West Was Won were kind of underbaked. But going off that last single, I'm very excited to see what it comes out with next. But I'm going to revisit Raw Footage and see if I liked it or not. So I'll reconsider. And that's from Honey Boof Boof. And as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. I'm just going to talk about two shows that I saw this weekend real quick. Well, Thursday and Saturday. On Thursday, I saw Tsunami Bomb, or the resurrected Tsunami Bomb, which is original members Dominic Davi, Oubliette Sparks, Gabe Lindemann, and new members Andy Pohl, or newish members Andy Pohl and Kate Jacoby, the new singer. And let me tell you, people, Tsunami Bomb kicked ass. Both Oubliette and Kate kind of sang equally, maybe Kate a little bit more, and they were fast, wild, loose, but it sounded real good, and they had a real dedication to, I guess, the inherent songs. It was fun. It was energetic. And it was great. So you should see Tsunami Bomb. Also, yet again, I make myself the biggest hypocrite at Punk News, out of anybody. Wasn't it last week where I was saying how I was mad at certain other Punk News podcasters for playing generic street punk that I find is incredibly boring? Wasn't that last week?
I can't even keep track of all of your.
Well, anyways, opening for Tsunami Bomb was this band called the Drugettes, which is four girls or four women that dress like the Droogs from Clockwork Orange and play Oi. And I'm like, this is going to be the dumbest thing ever. And then I watched them, and actually, it was kind of awesome. Like, the songs were like really good. It was Oi, and I'm not a huge Oi guy, but the songs were really cool and energetic. And I bought their CD afterwards. They had two CDs. They had one that was just them, and one was them and Vice Squad. And I was going to buy the other one that didn't have Vice Squad because Vice Squad is kind of like a boring, like, C-rate punk band. I'm like, I don't want to see the Vice Squad on it. So I said to the woman, I said, which one should I buy? And I kind of had my hand on the one that didn't have Vice Squad on it. And she's like, you should buy the one with Vice Squad. I was like, are you sure? And she's like, you should buy the one with Vice Squad. I was like, are you sure? She's like, you should buy the one with Vice Squad. So I bought the one with Vice Squad, and no lie, like, the Drew Gets are really cool, and they do a really cool acoustic cover. I'm not going to play it this week, but I'll play it next week. And honestly, Vice Squad is like really good. Like nobody's reinventing the wheel or anything, but it's like really good, like, first wave or early second wave punk rock. I was really surprised.
John, this is amazing to me. If for no other reason than you know, I like seeing you out there in the world and exposed to, you know, people. Exposed to, like, yeah, people and fun, and it breaks you out of your the cold, calcified personal mummification that you have built for yourself. I don't know if that's a thing. I'm just trying to.
Well, they go, Adam White saying, I put myself in a cocoon of hatred, if you will, which is probably.
Yes, accurate. That was far more eloquent than I was going for. Yeah. Cocoon, so of anyway, hatred, that works.
Drew Gets, Tsunami Bomb, awesome band live. Drew Gets, really cool band. And Vice Squad, surprisingly, really good, at least in 2017. Also on Saturday, I saw Blood Clot. That's John Joseph's new band. John Joseph, Todd Youth, Joey Costello, and Nick Oliveri. And they were real good. They opened for Negative Approach, and basically they played all they basically played their brand new album. What I didn't know is a lot of the songs in the new album actually go back to the original formation of Blood Clot from 1981. John Joseph was saying how a lot of the songs are from 1981 and they just recorded them now, which I think is pretty cool. The actual music was really, really good. They kind of had a little bit of trouble getting the crowd excited. And the reason is, while they were playing, the crowd was into it. But then between, like, each song, there was like 30 second break. And, you know, unless you're like Jell-O or Jack Terrycloth and you've got like really witty banter, you kind of got to do the Ramones thing and just go tune to tune to tune, no break. So I thought Blood Clot was real good live, but I kind of think they need to get rid of the breaks between songs. And I think people would have been blown out of their skull. But that being said, they're still a new band, if you will. They were sounding real good. I'm digging it. I'm digging the new album.
I'm actually going to see, I think they're coming here on their second to last or very last tour date, and I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, Ricky, give us an update, because when I saw them, they were very good while they were playing, but like the 30 second to minute breaks between each song kind of killed the momentum. So I'm interested to see if they, like, I mean, I only saw them on their second show ever, well, their third show ever, their third show ever. So maybe they'll be tighter when you see them between each song, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm seeing them like mid-August or something like that. But I don't think we have a review of it up on Punk News yet, but this album's fantastic.
Yeah, it is real good. But it is really good. But I'm surprised that everyone's like, this album's so fantastic, but no one talks about the Harley Flanagan album. I think that was equally as good.
I'll go and listen to
you
that
need to
again.
Listen to the Harley Flanagan album. I'm not dissing anybody. I'm a fan of John Joseph and Harley Flanagan. They both have excellent albums. And I think they both deserve attention.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the Blood Clot album is basically the only one I've been listening to this week. I think as of right now, it's like my second favorite record to come out this year.
All right, well, Ricky, we'll play a tune.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking about Blood Clot's new album, Up in Arms, that came out, was it this month or was it June?
I think it just came out this week, Ricky, like 5 days ago.
Has it only been five? Wow, feel that one, but oh no, it's 4 days ago here now. Here's Cali by Blood Clot.
No regression.
And that was Ricky paying roots to his Hindu origins with Kali off Blood Clock. And listen, so let's jump into Org Core. It was a big Org Core week at Punk News. Propagandi. They've released a new song and they've announced a new album. The new album is going to be called Victory Lap. Victory Lap. And the new song is called. It's got a cool title.
It's a title track.
Oh, it's the title track. It's called Victory Lap. Adam White, you're Canadian. You're an Orgcore kind of guy. You're a Propagandi kind of guy. Did you dig this track? Are you excited for this release?
Yeah, and there's a little bit more media about this floating around. Chris posted the lyrics to this song on Twitter. If you're so inclined to go check out what's there. I mean, I have a weird relationship with Propagandi in that, I mean, I was absolutely into them when they were, you know, a fat band, not like the record label, not, in Girth. I was a big fan of them after John left and they went on and started down this kind of like thrash direction that they had been pursuing since like Today's Empire is Tomorrow's Ashes. But after that record, I never was able to hold my attention with them. So like the last few of them were always records that would have like a handful of like really ripping, like really good tracks. And then a bunch of stuff that I think was like very technically good, but that for whatever personal reason that I had just would not keep me engaged. And there was something just about the mood of it all that was, it felt like got really dire on some of their stuff. And I always liked Propagandi more when they were a little bit more snide and a little bit more jokey about what they were doing. And I mean, that's absolutely the personality that comes through on like any of their press or anything like that. I mean, like go look at the things that Chris posts to Twitter and it's just like sarcasm lumped on sarcasm all the time. But their last few records have been sort of difficult for me in that they're not huge. They've never had huge staying power in my life. Now this song, I think is totally super fun. It's riffy. It's, you know, I've played it a bunch of times. It's one of the few songs that upon knowing that it existed, I sort of stopped what I was doing and went and made myself listen to it despite me not being in a situation to listen to it, which I think says something. What I mean by that is that like when this popped up last night, cause it was announced sort of like at like 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening or something like that. Like I was coming home from the gym or something like that. And I was going to go, I was not at a computer, but my phone buzzed me and was like, there's a Propagandi song. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to stop what I'm doing and pull out my phone wherever I happen to be and play this because I kind of need to hear it immediately. And there's something about, I don't know, the situation in the world or just the fact that we haven't had a Propagandi record in a while or whatever that makes this one feel like timely is not the right word necessarily, but makes it feel more immediate. It's like, I'm very aware of this and I am interested to hear what the whole thing sounds like. And I'm hoping I love it because I'm sort of prepared to love it, which is like an odd thing to say as someone who is sometimes considered a music critic, but I'm sort of prepared to love it.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you on this one, Adam. I mean, I have not been a long time Propagandi listener, but I have friends that are diehard fans, so they always get me to listen to it. You know, I sat down and really tried to like how to clean everything. I just didn't. But for me, they've always been sort of hit or miss. I think what they do, especially, I mean, since I play guitar and when I hear what they're doing, I think it's fantastic stuff. But I've not been able to say, oh my God, this discography is amazing. But I think Empires, like you mentioned, is fantastic. I still need to look into a couple of the later ones. I heard this and I pre-ordered this immediately. I think this is good. I'm going to, you know, I'll put down $20 to see what this is, what Propagandi can do in 2017.
I mean, there's a weird thing that that I was thinking about in terms of propaganda and sort of like how they've and politics, but like maybe I'll get John's reaction on this before I get into that. But I think it's an interesting thing to look at. Circle back to me. Is what I'm saying. Circle back to me. I got a thing here.
Oh, you might react to the track right
now.
Yeah,
yeah. What's going on, John?
You know what I find what is interesting about propaganda is it takes several elements that I like and then inverts them into something that I don't like that other people like quite a bit. For example, I love thrash music, or at least I like a lot of thrash bands. I love Slayer. I love Celtic Frost. I like Exodus. I love Carnivore. I love all those bands. And this starts off as thrash, but then it kind of like where Slayer would get crazier, where Celtic Frost would get darker, where Carnivore would get meaner, they kind of pull back and almost make it sound like Rush. And I find it interesting that it's a thrash band essentially that does very political stuff and no Dungeons and Dragons lyrics at all. I think that's cool. But I wish it was just nastier, kind of like Iron Reagan or something. So for me, when they really could go for the jugular, they back off and head more towards the Epiphat sound. So you've got a band playing thrash that's doing super political stuff that has intelligence behind them. And I don't like – and those are all three elements of punk that I like, but I don't like any of those elements in this band for some reason.
Yeah, like that, I can see what you mean there. And there's – they've not like completely detached from their roots as being a band with like a bit of like a 90s Fat Wreck sound, but they've and their relationship with that, like being that kind of band is I guess a little strange when you actually, you know, go and consider them in what was I gonna say, like if you consider them just as they are now and not kind of like what their history was to kind of get to where they are. That's totally like, I mean, especially if you're like a thrash person, that's totally an interesting thing to take of it. There are definitely songs that go, I think, and for that jugular that you're looking for. I mean, like Fuck the Border off of Today's Empire is Tomorrow's Ashes, is just like completely in that direction. But I mean, it's probably because it's one that Chris isn't singing. It's one that Todd is. And Todd, their bass player, the guy that they brought in actually after John K. Samson left the band, it's like he was in a bunch of those like thrashy hardcore metal bands and things like that. It's like he was in a band called I Spy, which is a hardcore band out of Regina before he joined Regina, Saskatchewan. We have a city called Regina.
Okay.
It's a city that rhymes. John. The logo, Regina is the city that rhymes with fun. That is what it says in the license plates in Regina. I didn't make up that joke, and I'm sorry if I offended anyone, but that's the joke. Anyways, it's the capital of the province. It's a big city. Anyways,
listen, I've been into Regina a couple of times. I love Regina. It's great.
It's a city. It's a real city. It's not funny. Okay, no, it's not the capital. Saskatoon is the capital. All right. So, oh, no. Now I'm blanking on whether Regina or Saskatoon. Let's find this out. I'm Canadian. I don't know this right now because you've infuriated me.
Regina. Hey, did you know that propaganda has a very rare demo? That
Regina is the capital. Yes. Has a very rare demo.
Yeah. I don't think many people know about this. Or it's a live record, rather. It's called Yip. Go ahead.
I did not.
Is this the lead to some joke I'm not catching, or is this an actual thing?
Why are you looking at Regina?
Oh, okay. Yeah, Regina's the capital sketch. I don't know why I was screwed up on that. Anyways, but like, coming back to like looking at it politically, it's weird to me to kind of follow along propaganda and where sort of like the center point of my love with them is would have been like Less Talk More Rock and then Today's Empires, right? So like the bridge between those two, and Less Talk More Rock feels so much like an album that was about the things that I was, say, politically involved in or politically concerned about but always like a few years after. So like Let's Talk came out in 1996. I was too young to really be into anything there. But if I look at like a lot of the topics that they talk about there, that's a lot, like a lot of the stuff that I was concerned about in like 2000, 2001 is totally stuff they were talking about on there. So I'm looking at it and like, there's, you know, there's animal welfare stuff that's on there. There's, you know, they talk about Shell on there. So there's this whole kind of like anti-corporatist aspect to it, where, you know, they're talking about oil companies and things like that. And like those things, you know, they're talking about neoliberalism to a degree. And like all those things were things that like a few years later when I started to become like older and politically active were all like, you know, very relevant topics and things that I was grappling with. Today's Empire Storms Ashes came out. And actually, I was a little bit surprised looking at this. That came out on February 6, 2001. So it was a pre-September 11th album, sort of despite the, you know, if you were to go grab a copy of it and just look at the cover art, like it totally looks politically like something that would be post 9/11, but it's not. And I still track so much with like with the politics and things that were being talked about on there. And then once we got out of the, like out of the Bush years and into the Obama years, those are the records that I am not immediately familiar with that didn't grab me to the same degree. So I'm trying to think what Propaganda would have released during the Obama years. And it might've been like supporting cast was still Bush, but like, so Failed States and, it was Supporting Cast and Failed States. Are those both Obama?
Supporting Cast.
When was Obama elected?
Obama's beginning of 2009 through 2016.
So Supporting Cast was probably recorded in October, November 2008. So that's still pre, right? So there was just the one from the Obama years, but there was something about like I guess just like the blinders of not having you know, George W. Bush around anymore, where my brain was less needed to go hear an angry Propaganda record at the time. Like, not that everything was rosy with Obama, of course. Like, you know, if you're the U.S. president, you do a certain amount of things that are horrible sort of as part of the role, I guess. But like, I was not righteous with anger. I didn't need Propaganda at the time. And now, you know, we're back with another record and we have, you know, Trump in the White House ruining your all your shit down there, John. And I'm curious as to how they react to it, because on the one hand, Trump seems so easy to react to because the things that he does are so like so clownish and so like obviously
insane.
I was trying to be more diplomatic than that, but like,
insane and is not honest. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, they're so blatantly dishonest. Like, there's no ideology behind it. Like, it was interesting to hear, say, Propaganda grapple with, say, like George W. Bush, right? Because Bush, I mean, put aside all of the, you know, Bush is a dummy stuff that everyone believed. But if you look at like Bush, when you're grappling with the ideology of the Republicans at that time, you know, you were dealing with this this neoliberalism. You were dealing with all of these actual like global political ideologies that people like Rumsfeld would have put forward that, you know, disagree with them as you will, and you probably should. But they were like, there was an ethos there, right? Like, what they believed in my mind was totally wrong, but they did believe it. Like, they did have a thing that they were trying to do. They were trying to change the world in a certain way. And I get the feeling that like, and if you're a political band, you can absolutely come out and strong, you know, forcefully say, I disagree with this, that, and the other that the Bush administration is doing. And, you know, at that point you have a conversation, right? Like, you disagree with these things and you're going to disagree with them with loud, angry rock songs, but you have stuff that you can talk about, right? With Trump, he's just so blatantly lying to people or doing things that are self-serving or harmful. And I don't see where the, rational disagreement with it comes through, because you almost like you don't need to write a song saying that, like, hey, maybe these policies that Trump is putting forward are bad. It's like, of course they're bad, right? Like, there's no nuance to anything that he's doing. So if you've got if you're going to write like a whole intelligent political record that is going to take down what's going on there, I'm so curious about like what the lyrical angle of the whole thing is. And my gut tells me it might just be pretty fatalistic. Like it's going to be like a rudimentary peni record, I guess. Right. Like it's just going to be like the world is fucked and we're all doomed, because I don't know how you have like a proper righteous disagreement with something that is so obviously disagreeable. Like, you don't need to be propagandi to look at the stuff that Trump is doing and angrily disagree with it. Like, it just should be reflexive if you're not a dick. So I'm so curious as to how this works.
When you talk about that stuff, you know, I think part of it is it's only been 7 months. And, you know, when you had a lot of the anti-Bush albums, you know, by 2003, Iraq and Afghanistan were happening. And he was elected in 2000. So I think that we'll get the nuance you're looking for from artists like Propagandhi probably, you know, a couple of years down the road. I just don't think the timing's there. I think the people in Propagandhi are smart enough to have written an album that would have spoken out against Clinton or Trump, or regardless. I think they were smart enough to know that Clinton was no better. So I think this one might be maybe this one won't be as direct at a certain person, but I mean there's still plenty of for them to talk about. I just think that, you know, the timing might have been a little off. Now of course that's no one's fault, but just something to consider.
It's somebody's fault. 32% of the voters or something like that. That's whose fault it is. Listen, let's talk about hot water.
I was talking about at all. I was talking about the
Before we do, there was a I think it was a Propagandhi shirt, but I'm not really sure. I'm trying to see if I can find it. There was a T-shirt that it might have been them that they had out before the election that had, I don't know, like some sort of grotesque two-headed monster that was drawn on it. But like the monster, I'm pretty sure was like Hillary Clinton's head, right?
Oh, and Bad Religion had one too.
Oh, maybe this is Bad Religion that did it. But like, I think, like, you know, it's super interesting to go and to say, as a punk band, you know, of course we don't want, you know, someone like Donald Trump to be in. But now that, you know, I'm thinking perfect world here. Now that Hillary Clinton is the president, you know, we're not just going to be like, yay, the Democrats won. Let's all go back to singing about beer. Like, no. Like, there's repugnant shit that's happening and we're going to point that out. And I think that, like, there's so much of a more subversive angle that you can take when you're a band and you're trying to point out these injustices that people are glossing over or not seeing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Trump thing, it's like the injustices are on like the front page of the paper every week. So like, what do you know? What do you do?
Satan is bad.
Yeah, it's like Satan is bad. It's exactly what it is. Oh God, let's talk about hot water music. John, you should have just said that like 10 minutes ago.
We Satan is bad. All right, listen.
Satan is bad.
Let's talk. Adam, that's the name of our episode. Satan is bad.
Oh God, I should write that down. Okay.
Listen, let's talk about hot water music. The Orcore fam is up in their flannels about this. Hot Water Music put out a new album. It's going to be out September 15, 2017 via the label where old bands go to get rejuvenated, Rise Records. They put out a new song. It's called Vultures, and it premiered in Germany, and I thought this was a bootleg or a leak, but it was an official posting, which I thought was I thought it was interesting that they picked a German website to debut this. But I guess, hey, listen, America is not the world, especially now. So Adam White, Hot Water Music. Hot Water Music. I know you are down with this jam.
Surprisingly so. So I said what I think was one of the most insulting things that I could say about the earlier song that came out from this, which if you go back and listen to the podcast, I said something where like, you know, there's a new Hot Water Music song. If you listen to it on YouTube with like speed times two, it's really good. Right. And which is to say, it was a fairly standard latter day, you know, big hard rock, Hot Water Music sounding song. And it did not seem at all remarkable or memorable to me. This one immediately grabbed my attention. I went back and I listened to it like three times in a row today when I was preparing for this show. And like they said to me, this sounds like two things combined, which both of which I'm cool with. First of all, it sounds just like a 90s punk rock song, especially at the start and the little kind of like rapid fire vocal thing that they're doing at the start of this. Like it sounds like 90s punk, which is kind of fun. And then when the actual they're out of the intro, I think, and they get into the sort of the meat of the first verse of the song, the band sounds a lot like what they used to sound like. Like the band sounds sort of like they do on, say, like No Division or one of those records. So there's something about this, either the way it's recorded or just like the way this particular song is written, that to me, it's Hot Water Music playing like a very obviously a punk rock song. But they also sort of sound throwback to what they sounded like, 10 plus years ago. And those two things I thought were incredibly interesting. And I'm now, you know, I'd pretty much mentally written off this new record. If for no other reason, then everything about it seemed fairly normal to me. Like the earlier song was kind of normal. The artwork, the title, the everything about it just seemed like, okay, it's another Hot Water Music record. Like it all seems like what I'd expect of it. But this song I'm totally into for reasons I'm articulating poorly, but, now I'm curious to see what the rest of this sucker sounds like.
Yeah. You know, I felt the same way about the first song that they released from this album. But nonetheless, Hot Water Music just have a very special place in my heart. They're one of the first punk shows I've ever went to. They weren't the first, but they were definitely like the first three or five. I loved Exister. I still do. That was the first album off Rise. This I thought was great. And you know, I wasn't too sure when I pre-ordered, I'm like, I'm not sure where this is going to go. This could be boring. Just by listening to the first track. This though, I agree, Adam. I think this is a really good Hot Water Music song. And I'm hoping for more power from the other tracks on the album. And I think this could be a really good album.
For me, it sounds like a 90s punk thing, especially with the rapid fire opening. It sounds like a 90s punk song. It sounds like No Division or something. And it's Hot Water Music playing a very obvious punk rock song. But it also sounds kind of like a throwback to what they were doing 10 years ago. I had written off the album because it all seemed pretty normal to me. It sounded like what I expected it to sound like.
That was great.
That was
did
great.
You like write down everything that we had said there? And
I wrote down what you said and I gave it a different inflection. No, listen, seriously, you know, I thought this was okay. It was punkish. I didn't hate it. But this is just not Johnny G's style. And this underscore, and I'm going to make a swear, well, I'm not going to swear, but I'm really not going to even try to address the issue at all, at least for the next couple of months, is a lot, not a lot, some 7 commenters think I'm terrible and they think I'm the worst thing ever. And coincidentally, those 7 commenters thought this was the greatest thing ever. And so that's really what it comes down to. John doesn't fit in with the prescribed definition of what punk rock should be. So we hate him, and that's what it comes down to. And, you know, this is not terrible. It's just not my bag. It's different people take different things from punk rock. This is not what I take from punk rock. But I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was okay.
Sounded very level
yeah,
of you.
I respect that.
Like you could have responded to that by saying, and to smite these seven people that give me shit on Punk News all the time, I'm going to murder this band, right? But you didn't do that, so that's big of you.
Adam, you said it more eloquently than anyone else about a year ago or so. You said you can break punk rock down into two things, really. You can break it down into the chaos zone where you can do whatever you want, or you can break it down into the zone where I don't fit in anywhere. Here's a place where I fit in. And I think in punk rock, that second zone is getting bigger and the first zone is getting smaller and is kind of becoming more heavy metal, if you that's more the metal community, if you will. But maybe not. I don't know. And that's where the division comes down to. That's where the Dickies and War and Women division comes down to. And that division is going to exist for a while. Even though there's no division here, there's a division. Speaking of...
Let me read this one, because I didn't watch the video, so I can't comment on it.
Go ahead.
So, yeah. Pitchfork, the website Pitchfork, they've reported that the official trailer for the Jawbreaker documentary, which is titled Don't Break Down, a film about Jawbreaker, has been released. The documentary is put together by Rocket Fuel Films. It has been 10 years in the making. It includes interviews with all of the members of the band, as well as other notable personalities, such as Billy Joe of Green Day, Steve Albini, the legendary music... I'm going to say sound engineer. He does not want to be called a producer.
Indeed, you are correct. I am Adam White just outpunks me. Adam White is entirely correct.
He is. He's going to read the article that we posted and get mad, but he's already mad.
He's mad about everything.
Yeah. He produced the new Mets record. Have you ever heard the first song from it? It sounds really good. Anyways. I just said produced. Damn it.
Okay. I got to be anti-Albini because Albini has talked some trash on a couple of my boys. So I got to be anti-Albini.
But you should just be pro the angry noises that he makes. Anyways,
I'm pro. So produces own.
The scene experienced quite a stir earlier this year when it was announced that Jawbreaker would be performing to play Riot Fest in Chicago this coming September. The film's premiere is going to be on August 11th, and you can go. You know, you should go check out this film before you go check out Jawbreaker playing live at Riot, and then you'll remember who they are. I guess you probably already remember who they are. Anyways, you can find the trailer for Don't Break Down over at Punk News. I, as in Adam, have not had a chance to watch this thing yet, so I don't have any opinion on it. You guys,
I was very intrigued by this trailer because I see a ton of Jawbreaker fans all over the place, and I remember listening to them a while ago and for whatever reason did not get into it, but what I want this movie to be is the reintroduction of Jawbreaker to me. And I don't have a full view of their history, so I'm gonna check this out. I don't know about in the theaters, but definitely if it's available like on VOD or something like that. I thought Billy Joe made a really interesting comment in the trailer where he said something like Jawbreaker, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Jawbreaker is supposed to bridge the gap between the musical gap between Nirvana and Green Day. And I don't know if you two have anything to say about that, but I thought that was a very, very interesting statement.
I'll actually say that's quite insightful. I find it interesting that Billy Joe puts himself on the same platform as Nirvana. Not that I don't, because I'm not a Nirvana maniac by any means, but
me
I
either.
Do find it interesting that in his mind, he's equal to Nirvana, where I think most people would say that Nirvana is the true artsy band or the true band with ethics, and Green Day is kind of the pop band pretending to be punk rock. That's not my argument. I think that would be a lot of people's argument. But I mean, let's be real. Nirvana's a pop band too. Anyways, the point being, with this is I found it very interesting to me that Jawbreaker is kind of the part where Jawbreaker is the place where John G and contemporary punk divides. Jawbreaker is important for taking punk rock and kind of adding in late 80s, early 90s rock elements to it, kind of a replacements vibe, kind of a emo core, if you will. And that's just not what I'm into. So for me, this is where I say thanks, but no thanks, and separate. And this is also where a lot of people kind of got into punk rock because it's approachable as opposed to what I wanted, something that's almost not approachable whatsoever. With documentaries, you can kind of break them down into three things. You can break them down into a history of the band. You can break them down into a bunch of talking heads talking about why such a band is great. Or you can break it down into a band faces an event. How will they get over that event? It seems like this is mostly the third one with the reunion, but they're going to flash back to the band's history. My favorite kind of documentary is basically just the history of the band talking about their own history, like the Circle Jerks, My Life is a Jerk DVD. I think that's probably one of the best music documentaries there is. This one, I think fans will enjoy this, but I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot of revelations in this, and it might be a little too Jawbreaker's the best thing ever, and not a whole lot of critical attack.
Sentimental is what you're looking to say.
Good work, indeed. So Adam, unless you have something strong to say, we'll segue that into our next and last org core story of the night. Adam White mentioned Billy Joe Armstrong, and so did Tricky Ricky. Well, the combo that people have been literally dreaming of for over 30 years now has finally come to fruition. Tim Armstrong and Billy Joe Armstrong and Billy Joe Armstrong's son and Billy Joe Armstrong's nephew have united to record a song. It's called If There Was Ever a Time. You can get it in two spots. There's a flexi disc in New Noise Magazine, and they're also selling a flexi disc directly for $15 that benefits 924 Gilman. The song is also heard on the DVD of Turn It Around, The Story of East Bay Punk, which is kind of a big documentary. It's making some waves. It's basically the history of the 924 Gilman scene. Of course, Billy Joe Armstrong is in it. Tim Armstrong is in it. Jesse Michaels is in it. A whole bunch of people are in it. This song, a lot of people have a lot of thoughts on it. Adam or Ricky, I don't know if you guys had any cursory thoughts, or what was this the pairing that you had hoped and dreamed of since you were a young lad riding your bicycle to the store to buy some cassettes and maybe a Slurpee with your $1.37 left over in change? Is this what this song is?
This never even occurred to me that this would happen. Here's the deal. I don't want to hit New Noise at all, but I did not enjoy this song. I thought it was so generic. It kind of took off and then just like immediately like crashed. I'm like, there's nothing special here. I mean, except for the fact that you have two big names and then one and then two relatively known names. This didn't do anything for me.
can that be my no. If there was this type of release, really, I feel like makes me like eat a lot of the words from my youth. Whereas when you're young and you're getting into certain bands, you're getting into punk rock and you're getting into all these dumb bands and you love them despite a lot of the, I want to say like glaring goofiness that's inherent with the whole thing, but you sort of love it anyways. And people who are either older or who have been through it or just are from the indie rock scene or whatever, or like we wouldn't have called them hipsters or anything back in the day, but you know, they're looking at it all snidely and being like, oh, you're into all this goofy punk rock, but we're into all this, like, you know,
Sonic Youth,
serious shit over here. We're listening to whatever, right? They're listening to metal, or they're listening to prog, or they're listening to prog. You know, I don't know. I've seen people that are
1974.
I don't know. I just like people are into shit that they think is artistically like a level above any of this, right? But you're a kid and you're like fuck you, I'm gonna party forever, right? And you don't want to deal with any of that shit. But then you start to grow older and you look at the things that you're listening to, and then you look at something like this, and this is like, this is the dream song for a certain version of Adam White, for some 16-year-old version of me, a song with Tim Armstrong and Billy Joe, you know, together making a band and singing together and all that. that should be like a landmark thing that I am just stampeding over other humans to try to acquire. And I listen to this and I'm just like, you know, I've heard it once, and then I went back and I got, oh, I should listen to that thing again. And I got like 30 seconds into it, and I was like, yeah, all right, I know what's going on here. And there's just nothing about it that is appealing to the me of 2017 at all. And I want to be like, oh, they just wrote a dumb throwout song for this kind of thing. But like, I don't know if that's the case. I think there's something wrong with me, John. Like that, like I'm broken now, and something like this that should be bringing me like the ultimate level of joy, it brings me nothing. And it is something I'm grappling with. And I keep wanting to have discussions about this, but I can't think about how to have the discussion without making me sound like a complete elitist dick now. Like I'm going to be that guy. Right. But I'm looking at stuff that came out this year and like how much I've listened to some of it and how much I haven't listened to others. And I'm like, oh, holy shit. Like, you know, like the, what the gypsy woman said is true. Like all of these, you know, all the curse is happening. So like,
my favorite bands are crappy now. No,
my favorite bands are crappy now. Like, so I'm looking at it. We're like, it's so like, I've listened to Rancid's Troublemaker once, maybe twice. And I feel like I'm good. Like I remember like when I listened to it, I didn't hate it. Right. But I listened to it and I'm like, all right. Like, I know what this is. I know how this works. But then when I pull open, you know, I'm at work and I pull open my iTunes, like I've listened to the weird new record from Bonnie Doon, like 30 times. I've listened to the Plasma Lab record, like 20 times. I've listened to, what else is like the new Teen Anger record that came out like a week ago. I've listened to at least a dozen times. Like I'm listening to all these like scuzzy, abrasive, punk rock things that I don't think I would have enjoyed when I was 16. But I'm listening to them a ton and just digging into them. And then the new Rancid record or this, I've listened to it once or twice and I'm like, all right, I get it. And then I'd never go back.
And well,
then I'm turning into John is what I'm doing.
You're turning into me.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I'm going to be like, I'm going to be listening to just like tape loops of like, of ambient, like power tools being dropped downstairs or something like that. And then anyone that actually listens to a song that has like an actual recognizable time signature in, I'm going to be all like, you kids and your stupid songs. Like, is that what's happening to me? I don't want that to happen to me.
Welcome to the dark side, Adam. Speaking of scuzzy stuff, is I usually portray myself as a guy that likes the mean music, but more and more, Adam's been playing some pretty scuzzy, nasty hardcore, and I've been playing like Vice Squad. You know what I mean? So I think Adam White is actually a little bit more hardcore than people think. And along those lines, Adam, and I gotta come clean. I recently bought Pill's first album on vinyl a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't listen to it, and I've never listened to it on vinyl. I finally listened to it on vinyl. Damn, that album is heavy and hardcore and scuzzy. It almost sounds like a Melvins record. I'm not joking.
Yeah, and there's songs on there that are like totally like to the point of unlistenable, where they're just like long and annoying.
Dude, that album rocks, man. That album is right? Like heavy damage, man.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm looking at something like this. I mean, to bring it back to this song, like,
why?
Well, no, because there's a part of me that really wants to celebrate this, because again, like, this would have been a huge deal for me at a certain time in my life, and I can't tell if I'm now old and ruined, and I can't feel fun anymore. or is this just sort of a bad song?
No. It's pretty much consensus, at least in the comments. And I'll agree. It's not a good song. It's weird how I'm finding these like collaborative projects that like, you know, this sort of has the same issue that Prophets of Rage EP had. There's just too much. I don't know. It's like they either didn't do enough or they did too much. I'm from different projects and bring them all together. I don't know.
Collaborations are notoriously kind of crappy unless the two bands are on like a similar wavelength. And really, with this one, I think they just didn't put in the work. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at Mick Jagger and David Bowie's dancing in the street, it's pretty bad.
That is cringy.
You look at David Bowie and Freddie Mercury doing it Under Pressure. Is it a little corny? Maybe, but it's weird and unique and it's awesome.
Oh, no. Well, I would actually say that's a fantastic song, I would say.
That's what I'm saying. I agree. I may also cite that this track is not that good, but I don't know if it's that, Adam, you don't enjoy the things you used to enjoy. If you remember, 4 years ago, Jesse Michaels and Tim Armstrong did a song together, and it kind of kicked ass.
You know what? It may just be that I'm less accepting of things from those artists that are of poor quality.
Yes.
Whereas if I otherwise would have just written it off because like they're my favorite band, right? So, you know, it may be that, and that I'm having a harder time like overlooking the weak stuff when there is just such a dearth of music out there and you don't need it. I mean, I think maybe that may be like the big like growing up thing that I had to learn was it's not so much that like you grow out of like a lot of this dumb punk rock stuff. It's more that there's so much music that, you know, if it's dumb, good punk rock, then that's great. But if it's just dumb, then like you don't need it. There's other shit you could be listening to. Like you only have so much time on this earth. So like why waste it listening to like a bad song by your favorite band? You know, go listen to good songs. I don't know.
Did you either of you watch the trailer for the documentary though? It actually looks quite good. Like I've never been able to find a good documentary about this.
I've seen reaction to it by people that I know that lived in the East Bay for a little while, and they all seem to have positive vibes and memories and everything that sort of came from the trailer to this. So, yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see them both, but I'm way more interested to see this than the Jawbreaker thing.
I agree. I agree.
The thing with this documentary, though, is and I'm not dissing it. You got to pick a path and go down it. Is it basically paints the 924 Gilman scene as like heaven on earth and the greatest thing ever? When a few artists that I've interviewed that were, and I'm not going to name check them because I don't want to call them out and get them involved in something. A couple of artists that I've interviewed that are like really that were really involved in that say, listen, it wasn't like heaven on earth. It wasn't the greatest scene ever, and the documentary kind of paints it that way. But honestly. Were I doing it, and I didn't because I'm not skilled enough to do it, so who am I to comment? But I would have put the counter opinion in there too. But that being said, it is nice to you know have people just talking about a cool scene they like. Listen, let's play a song. We've been going on and on and on. Let's play a song. Adam, what, you got a jam?
Yeah, okay. Here's a little punk rock song for us here. So this is a band out of Montreal called Priors, P-R-I-O-R-S. It is a... I was about to say super group, but that doesn't make any fucking sense because no one knows who any of the bands that are in this band are. it's a collaboration between members of the Montreal garage punk art group The Famines and the Montreal punk rock band Sonic Avenues. So it's basically the drummer, I think, from The Famines, and then the frontman of Sonic Avenues, and then I believe the other two guys, the guys playing guitars, are also from Sonic Avenues that are in it. So anyways, they just had a full length that came out on the Pentagon Black label, and Priors are fun. If you like Sonic Avenues at all, and you should, they had a couple records that came out on... What were Sonic Avenues records out? It was either they were either on
Dirt Nap, or they were on
Sonic Adventures. Did have
Deranged.
Oh yeah, I think it's Deranged.
It was Dirt Nap or Deranged. It was one of these labels that is cool and starts with a D. So either or, they can both take credit. That's fine. If you like Sonic Avenues, it's the same vocalist. I saw these guys play, and the vocalist was super drunk, and Sonic Avenues was playing like across town later that evening, and I don't even understand how he got to that second show and played it, having played this first one and being super drunk, but it was sort of great for that reason. So anyways, this is Priors. The song is called Got In Me.
That was Priors, another Adam White scuzzy band, which I'm becoming more and more a fan of. Listen, you guys want to talk about these spiky-haired guys, or do you guys not want to talk about them?
It's worth mentioning.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, they are an incredibly huge band that we don't talk about.
Yeah,
so okay. We should probably talk about them. The name of the podcast says we should talk about them.
The third or fourth punk band, or quote, punk band that John G. ever saw, has lost their vocalist. Jorge has quit the Casualties. However, the band will continue with new singer David Rodriguez, who was also in a band. I think he's in the Crumb Bums or something.
He's
like
in
that.
Crumb Bums, and he's currently in Starving Wolves right now.
Well, there you go. We'll mention it. We got to mention it. His quote was, after 27 years performing with the band, Jorge has chosen that the touring life is no longer for him. We're going to continue, yada, yada, yada. About a year and a half ago, there were some accusations that were never confirmed or denied regarding Jorge and regarding assault. He denied it, but there was never any police charges or anything like that. However, that has tainted his legacy, if you will. As hard as it is to believe that the Casualties legacy could be tainted, there you have it. Do you guys think this is a coincidence? Is this a result of that? The Casualties. Does anybody care about the Casualties?
I never really got into them, but what I find interesting is that there's continuing and still being the Casualties with a lead singer. It's not, I mean, as kind of shitty as it is to say, like, if you lose your drummer, they're not really the main core of the personality of the band. When you lose your lead singer, that's a bigger loss. And so, I think David Rodriguez, I saw him at Punk Rock Bowling with Starving Wolves, this year, and then I saw them open for Leftover Crack earlier. He's really good, and he's a really good replacement for this band. So, you know, if they're going to keep carrying on, I and without him, I think this is probably a good way to go.
I don't have anything too much to say about the casualties.
Oi.
I think they just played punk rock bowling too, didn't they? I think they did a club show? I didn't go to that one.
I wasn't at that one,
so I wasn't sure. But I think they did. Also, 27 years, I mean, maybe he's just tired of it. I don't know. That's a long time.
I was tired of it at 27 minutes. Listen, man, I'm being extra salty this episode. Let's pull back on that salt. Let's pull back on that vinegar. I think you could fairly say it's the polar opposite of the casualties. Downtown Boys, they've released a new track. It's called Lips That Bite. It's off their third album, not their second, their third album. The album is called The Cost of Living. It's out August 11 via Sub Pop. And as we've discussed before, the first and second Downtown Boys albums were very punk rock, and that's a loud, abrasive, a lot of wacky sax going on, very punk. This track, more post-punk. I'm not thrilled that they're no longer doing the super punk thing. I always get kind of bummed out when bands go from being punk to not being so punk, at least sound-wise. Ceremony. That being said, I'm digging this, man, and I don't know if I'm going to love the album or not, but I definitely think that the better production is being used in a good way with regard to this band. So they've changed their sound quite drastically. They've got better production, which can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. I think as the way that they've changed their sound, this better production is giving the band a unique sound, a post-punk sound, but a lead singer. I think Victoria is her name, I believe, the lead singer. She's still got that very unique voice. It's coming through. I think this band is punk in 2017. It's people addressing social issues. They've got a point. The point they make isn't agreed upon by all people. And actually now they're facing the against me backlash, if you will. 2 years ago, this was the punk darlings. Everyone's like, this band is ultra punk. Now the punks that work at a certain black and white magazine where John G kind of made one of their staff mad, those kinds of punks, they're saying that these guys are sellouts now for signing to Sub Pop, because I'm sure they're making millions of dollars on Sub Pop. Anyway, I thought this track was cool. Downtown Boys is progressing, and I'm interested to see what happens next. Adam, what, you got an opinion?
I mean, I like the sound that they have going on here. And I was just thinking about it, and you could argue that were they to get a bigger budget and then record the same completely raw thing that they could have recorded without the bigger budget, then why get it in the first place?
Cash. Keep the extra cash.
I get, like, but if you're gonna get the money to get, you know, this level of production, the way that they're going about it here doesn't seem like a bad one to me. It's not like they're recording a super cleaned up version of Full Communism. They're recording a different sounding and different, like, differently written record that actually befits the style of production that they have on here. And I feel like that's a better play than just recording like a higher value version of what you did prior, because people liked what you did prior. And like, why part, like, the rawness was part of what made that sound work. So you can't clean up that rawness. Like, that's counterproductive. So you zig and you do something that's, you know, that's musically a little bit different, but can actually make use of this kind of production. And I don't think that's a bad move for them. I won't speak to your this feud that you've fostered on this episode with Maximum R&R or anything, but you were like, you're like, I'm making peace with everyone. I don't have any enemies right now.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm gonna manufacture some more.
You're right. You know, actually, right now is a really bad time for me to make enemies because I got a lot of projects in the works. I need Maximum Rock and Roll. I love you. You're great. And actually, I even sent a record in to them to review. Maximum Rock,
yeah,
and Roll.
So you're well. There you go. You're not a.
Or am I ultra punk because I'm insulting them, even though I want them to do something for me, a la Steve Albini.
I don't think you should compare yourself to Steve Albini either. Just don't dig any holes. Is what I'm saying. Don't dig. No dig.
That's what we do.
So anyways, yeah. So,
you know,
Ricky, you got anything to say about the Downtown Boys here?
Yeah, I mean, listen. I remember Full Communism. When did Full Communism come out?
Was it 2 years ago?
A couple years ago, yeah.
So yeah, I remember everyone like liking that one. That it honestly didn't do anything for me. This song that we're talking about now did not do anything for me. This is not my bag. They never have been. I'm not saying it's not garbage. It just never did anything for me. So pass on this one.
Let's wrap up the episode with one of my favorite bands, who just put out one of their best, if not their best album, Integrity. They're now streaming their album, Howling for the Nightmare Shall Consume. And the concept of Howling for the Nightmare Shall Consume is artist Francis Bacon gets sucked into a void and is dragged across humanity's critical junctures. And at each juncture, humanity degrades and fails at being a positive force in the universe. And at the end, Francis Bacon.
That totally happened to me on Saturday.
Oh, yeah? What happened?
I got sucked into a void and I had to be witness to all of humanity's failings.
Oh, so you were on the Punk News podcast? So anyways, the new album is out. It's getting good reception. I'm not even saying this as a fan. I love this album. It's unique to the band in that it's much more heavy metal, if you will. If anything, it sounds like a hardcore band that someone layered 80s thrash metal solos on top of, that someone then layered almost death metal vocals on top of. And it's a really weird combination, I think, is not intuitive, but works really well. And I think this album is fantastic. It's heavy, it's dark, it's weird, and it's intelligent. It's hitting all the John G boxes.
Not enough whiskey and friendship for me, John. I'm sorry.
There's no friendship on this album.
I'm just gonna leave it at that. That's really where you should.
Well, all right, listen.
It's the end of the conversation when it comes to Integrity. So,
well, I'll play a song and then we'll wrap.
You should play a song and
this is off Integrity's new album, because I don't think I've actually played an Integrity song, but this song describes the album in one song. This is I Am the Spell. And we're back, and that was Integrity doing I Am the Spell off the new album Howling for the Nightmare Shall Consume, out now via Relapse Records. Adam White, Ricky, have we made enough enemies on tonight's podcast? Have I moaned and groaned enough about whiskey and friendship? And have you, too, basically made your point of view that whiskey and friendship is a good thing and that unity can never be bad because if the kids are united, they will not be divided?
You know, whiskey and friendship in moderation is never a bad thing. When it comes to making enemies, until there's a new Transplants album being announced, there's nothing else that I can do for now.
Ricky, that's literally next week. They're probably going to announce a new Transplants album next week. I'm not even kidding you.
Bring it on. You know what? I'm surprised we didn't get, I mean, granted right now the episode's only been out for a day and a half now. I'm surprised we didn't get any immediate hate mail on our discussion about the Dickies Warped Tour fiasco. So I'm looking, if we do get any mail, I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to making some enemies. It's gonna be fun.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.